Chris Reyes is Scott, who now lives in Seattle and has a lighthearted website and a book called The Septic's Companion. It's designed to help Americans understand British slang, including the insults you're not likely to catch. Chris is here to take your calls at 877-333-RICK as we get an earful of British wordplay on Travel with Rick Steves. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Septic's Companion. Got a picture of a septic tank on the cover of this book. How does that mean a companion for American travelers, the Septic's Companion?
Yes, my wife said this was a bad idea for the book title. I ought to explain a little about something called Cockney rhyming slang in order to describe the title. So a Cockney
This is Cockney, so that's the working class downriver from London.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so they've got their own rhyming slang.
That's true. Okay. And it's much like, in the same way as lots of other kind of subcultures have a slang that they use, this is the London slang, Cockney rhyming slang. And so in Cockney rhyming slang, you will use a two-word couplet to refer to another word, which is the word you're after. And so I would use, the phrase butcher's hook to mean the word look.
So if I'm thinking of look, if I'm Cockney, I think of a word that rhymes with look that has a word before it. Hook, butcher's hook. Cockney would know I'm talking about look.
That's true, although it does have to be the particular phrase butcher's hook. You couldn't think of some other phrase.
So that somebody just said that's the definition,
yep.
Butcher's hook. All around England, if you say, let's go take a butcher's hook, people will know you're saying, let's go take a look.
Well, actually, you can actually use just the first word of that couplet. And in a lot of cases, that is what you use in order to refer to it. So
okay.
People actually wouldn't really understand butcher's hook if you used it to mean look. They would understand butcher's.
So it dissolves into the common
exactly.
language. Now, how does that relate to the title of your book, The Septic's Companion?
Well, so septic, the two-word couplet septic tank, is used in Cockney rhyming slang to refer to the word yank, which to a Brit is anyone from America.
So would you say anybody in Britain, if they said septic's companion, would realize that means the yank's companion?
Oh, yeah, certainly. And this slang has actually gone outside of the UK. So, for example, in Australia, they will use the term septic to refer to Americans, and they further abbreviated it to SEPU.
Americans are called septics. Okay, well, this is one reason to get this book, I guess. Now, I'm always impressed when I travel around Britain how much fun it is. This is basically a glossary of all the words that can cause a language barrier between Americans and Brits. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. Jim's on the phone in Bay City, Michigan. Jim, thanks for your call.
Hey, thanks for talking to me, Rick. I'm traveling with my family. We're going to London, and I was wondering if there was any expressions that we might use here in the States that we may want to refrain from over there.
Ooh, interesting.
Anything that may be offensive and we wouldn't know it.
Obviously, we have to be a little bit careful here. There are many of them.
Well, let's have some.
Possibly the one that you're going to come across the worst is the word fanny.
Is that right?
Obviously, in the US, well, we all know what a fanny is, which is your posterior. But in British English, and it never refers to that, and in British English, how can I describe this carefully, only a lady would have one.
It's a vagina.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
You can say vagina on the radio. But in Britain, a fanny, if you say, because my dad always said, I'm going to spank your fanny. That would not be a nice thing to say in England.
That would be perhaps an inappropriate thing to say in England, yes.
What's another example? Napkin, isn't that a problem?
Napkin, yes, true.
Napkin means tampon.
Yes, and
so in a restaurant, if you ask for a napkin, you're not going to get a serviette.
Well,
which
I think
probably
like
want.
Again, in a restaurant, they'll be fine with that.
Okay.
So certainly the fanny one, people will be confused by. And another one is the it's just a name, but the name in the US, Randy, does not. It has a real meaning in the UK, which is best equated to kind of the American English. Horny. So
so if your name is Randy and
yeah.
you meet a woman at customs in London at the Heathrow Airport and you say, "Hi, I'm Randy."
Yes.
That's probably not a good thing to say.
If your name is Randy, it's a good idea to invent another name while
Randolph.
Traveling to the UK. Yeah, exactly.
Randolph. Well, suddenly Randy is Randolph. There you go, Jim.
I appreciate it.
So watch out for Fanny and Randy. And besides the fact, a fanny pack, a lot of Americans have a fanny pack.
Yeah, they don't call them that in the UK.
What do you call them in the UK?
They call them bum bags.
Bum bags.
Now, of course, bum in the UK means your posterior. It doesn't mean
I'll never forget being on a cruise ship in the Caribbean, and we had an exercise class, and we had a British exercise leader, and she said, I remember we're laying on the floor, and she goes, kick your bum, kick your bum. And it was just a way to stretch, and I got used to the bum. All right. Jim, we're learning lots here.
Thanks, guys.
Happy travels.
Thank you.
And Barbara's on the phone in Westcliff, Colorado. Barbara, thanks for your call.
Oh, Hi, Rick. How are you?
Doing well. We're having fun with the language barrier in Britain here. Do you got a comment or a question?
Yes, exactly. Whenever I'm traveling and I run into someone that speaks with a, you know, good British or Australian or New Zealand accent, and I don't understand them, I'll say, I'm sorry, I don't speak English. I'm an American. And it always gets a good laugh and then a nod, and then it just breaks the ice and opens up the conversation for much more, you know, good exchange.
It's interesting that, you know, you're belittling yourself here, but in actual fact, in a lot of senses, the English that they speak in America is more similar to classic Old English than some of the English they speak in the UK.
Huh.
So an example of that would be the fact that you spell colour C-O-L-O-R and we spell colour C-O-L-O-U-R. C-O-L-O-R is actually the same as the Old English. We had some sort of, you know, variations over time, and you guys, because you're, you know, a bigger country, it takes longer for the language to evolve, you ended up with the old spelling and we got a new one.
Barbara, I think that's a very good idea to say you speak American when you go to England. I think that's a fun excuse to have some fun with local people.
Yeah, exactly. It really just opens things up and lets them realize that, yes, they're speaking a little bit differently, and they may not understand some of the things that I say, too.
All right. Well, happy travels.
Thank you.
Thanks. Walter's on the phone in San Francisco. Hi, Walter. Thanks for your call.
I actually had the opportunity to move and live in London for about 4 or 5 years in the early 80s. And I remember one of my friends gave me a book by George Mikesh, How to Be an Alien. And I wonder if you've ever heard of that book, because it's quite a humorous thing, sort of the differences between the language and as a foreigner, how one tries to fit in.
Interesting. No, it sounds interesting. I haven't heard of it, actually.
And what did you learn from it, Walter?
The one thing I probably learned most from it, well, at that end, also working there, is that as an American or as a foreigner, to be very careful, because the English can use language as an offensive weapon, and to really be kind of careful.
The English can use language as an offensive weapon. That's interesting. What's your take on that, Chris? There is a biting kind of wit with the English. They can put you in your place even without you knowing it, and everybody else on the bus goes, wow, that was quite an insult.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of wordplay involved in chit-chat in the UK. My wife is Greek, and Greek is a very emotive language. People always sound like they're having an argument in Greek.
Right.
You know, when we first got together, my wife and I thought that she was having an argument with the family, and the conversation would end up in tears, and I'm sure something terrible would happen, and they were just talking about the weather. And I think, like, English to American is reasonably similar to that. There's a lot more kind of wordplay and a lot more kind of aggressive kind of banter than there is in the US. People in the US are quite careful, certainly up here in the Northwest, are quite careful about how they appear to other people. And it's less of that in the UK, I think.
All right, Walter. Well, good luck with your communicating and your travels.
Well, I'll keep working on it. Thank you.
All right. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Ray. Chris has written a fun little book called The Septic's Companion, obviously, the Yankees' Companion. Chris's website is septicscompanion.com.
Yeah, the website's kind of an ongoing thing. The book is sort of, in a sense, like a spin-off of the website. Like, I've been running the website for 12 years, and the book is like an imprint of the website.
Chris, I want to go back to my word list here. Now, we have, if you're playing football and you want to protect the area between your legs, you wear a cup.
This is what we would call American football.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even in English football, I think it'd be nice to have a cup. What do you call it?
We would call that a box.
You wear a box,
not
a cup.
No.
Huh. You drink out of a cup.
We drink out of a cup. You could drink out of a box if you like, I suppose.
I'd rather not drink out of a box in England. We all have a lot of garage sales. You guys have smaller houses, so you limit it to the back of your car, right?
Yes, car boot sales. I think they're an institution reasonably similar to garage sales, although possibly there's a little bit more of a kind of low-class feel to car boot sales.
Okay. But, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Every society has to have a place where you get rid of your junk and try to turn it into some hard cash. So
yep.
You have it in a, what do you call it again? Car boot.
Car boot. Oh, yes, of course. Sorry, I forgot. I've been here for a while now, but I forgot. The boot is, of course, the trunk of the car.
Well, of course, yeah. The boot.
Of course. Well, so I think
a trunk,
it came
you
from,
put a trunk in the boot.
Yes, I think boot came from boot locker. When the trunk of your car was very small and all you put in it was your boots. And so...
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. Now, I offend my bus drivers when I'm a tour guide in England by calling them bus drivers. Because they like to be a coach driver.
Oh, interesting.
See, coach is a higher class. A bus is, you know, a bus runs you around the city, I guess, but a coach will is what tourists take around the countryside.
Yeah, that's true. A bus would be on a scheduled route, and a coach would be something that you chartered.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about eating and drinking. Of course, you got this yellow stuff on all the desserts.
Custard?
Yeah.
Well, it's, a natural thing to put in a dessert.
Anything. You just dribble some yellow sauce on it, and it's sweeter, right?
Yeah, I must say, the Brits are good at a lot of things, but food isn't really one of them.
So custard is it.
It's custard.
Your generic sweet topping.
Yep.
All right. And if you want to have a drink with that, you might have a cuppa.
You might have a cuppa, which is, of course, a cup of tea.
Not a cup of coffee? And when you say a cuppa, you refer to a tea, huh?
Yeah, I think when you offer someone a cuppa, they could say, I'd like coffee, and that would be fine. But by default, it would be kind of tea,
Now, I've got a friend who ran a museum in London, the Tea and Coffee Museum. And he was so passionate about the death of good tea when they brought in tea bags. And the tea bag came along with the commercial television. And people needed to make a cuppa during a commercial break. So they had a tea bag that could actually brew tea as quick as a commercial. With the advent of commercial television, we got these bloody tea bags. And he said that was the last good cup of tea, unless you're going to go without the tea bag. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Ray, who writes a book called The Septic's Companion. And I just have so much fun with this because I thought I spoke English. And you go over there and somebody might point on the ground and say, there's a dog end.
What's a
dog end?
It's not what you'd think.
No.
It's the end of a cigarette.
So we say it's a butt.
A cigarette butt.
So they'd call it a dog end.
Yeah.
And what's a dog's breakfast?
A dog's breakfast is something that you've made a bit of a mess of. Like, you might regard, something that you've written poorly or something that you produced badly as being a dog's breakfast.
So if you go to England without a good itinerary, your vacation might be a dog's breakfast.
Exactly. Perfect usage. Or you could say dog's dinner as well.
A dog's dinner?
Yep.
Dog's dinner or dog's breakfast?
Yeah, I think to dogs it's all the same kind of thing.
All right. And if your trip's in a state of disarray, if it's just one dog's breakfast, it's easier to get swindled and somebody might diddle you.
They might diddle you, yes. That's
and I don't want to be diddled when I'm away from home.
Exactly. That's just kind of like a kind of friendly swindle.
You've been diddling me.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop diddling me.
You'd be more likely to be diddled out of like a pound or two than £10,000.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about language, of course, English is the Queen's language, the Queen's English. And you've got the Gaelic languages, the old Celtic languages.
Yep.
Historically, people spoke Scottish, Irish, and Welsh. What's the status of those three languages these days?
The honest answer about Irish is I'm not very sure. Scottish Gaelic is really kind of a dead language. I think there's something like 10,000 Gaelic speakers in Scotland. And really, that's people who speak Gaelic at all.
It's like a parent deciding to raise their kid speaking Esperanto or something. I mean, like, what good is it?
Yeah, I think you might find Esperanto is more popular, actually. So this is speaking Gaelic as a second language.
There's very few people. There's nobody whose first language is Scottish.
I mean, there is, but you could probably count them on your hand.
So that's sort of a cultural oddity. But on the other hand, in Wales, there's people who do speak Welsh as their first language quite routinely.
Yeah. Wales is very much a bilingual country. And the further you get into the country in Wales, the more likely you are wandering around Wales to hear people talking Welsh on street corners and this kind of stuff.
Now, I hear there's a big movement in Scotland afoot to make the signs bilingual, one in Scottish and one in English. What's with that?
Yeah, Gaelic for the Scots is a bit of a hot button in that the Scots are a bit of a sort of rowdy nation. They don't like being, at the end of the day, England is the greater part of the United Kingdom and the Scots feel they're under the English a bit. And the language is a bit of it's an emotive thing more than actually a practical thing. And so there's a lot of Gaelic television programs in Scotland, for example. But really, they're pandering to a very small number of Gaelic speakers.
They actually have Gaelic media, huh, in Scotland?
Yep.
Now, when you guys saw the movie Braveheart, that's freedom, right? Does that kind of make Scottish people feel really great?
I think it makes us feel special about Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. But that must resonate with Scottish people because you are subjugated.
Yep, true.
By the English.
Yeah, I think some of the anti-English feeling in Scotland, and there's a lot of genuine anti-English feeling in Scotland, but in the UK as a whole, there's a lot of kind of playful rivalry between the nations. So people will pick on, English people at work in a sort of jokey fashion. The Scots have a word for English people, Sassenachs, which basically, it's their derogative term for the English. And that,
Sassenach?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I actually don't know what it means. It's Gaelic, though.
You just call them a Sassenach, huh?
Yeah.
Now, I've heard that if somebody is on a British sports team or something and they happen to be Scottish, if they screw up, oh, they're Scottish. And if they're a champion, they're British.
Yes, yes. Sadly, that's true. There's no successful Scottish sports team really exists apart from curling. Actually, that's another interesting thing about the Britain versus the countries/regions that encompass Britain is that sport-wise, Scotland, England, and Wales often get their own teams for things, and in kind of politics and this kind of thing, it's the UK. So as I say, it's easy to become confused by them. I do feel sorry for.
So England will give you a little independence when it comes to sports.
Yeah, a bit,
but not when it comes to politics. Although you have your parliament now in Scotland for the first time since 1707, the Scottish have their own parliament. What's with that?
Well, of course, the ex-Prime Minister, Tony Blair, was educated in Scotland, so I think he's a little affinity for Scotland. And there was a feeling that some of the Scottish nationalist problems that were occurring could actually be alleviated by giving the Scots some control over stuff.
So a little bit of bonsai democracy. It looks good in the window and cut it back if necessary.
Well, I mean, they do have some control. It's reasonably similar to how the state governments work versus the federal. So they can control taxes within a certain leverage, and they have some control over education and this kind of stuff. So
there's a strong spirit in Scotland.
Yeah, no, that's certainly
and,
true.
There's so much more to talk about. I've been studying English with Chris Ray. Chris writes a book called The Septics Companion. His website is septicscompanion.com.
It's certainly true that having moved to the US myself, I noticed that a lot of Americans when they go to Britain are truly gobsmacked at the language barrier they hit.
Gobsmacked?
Is a word for mouth. Smack obviously means smack, so...
It's one of those, I could have had a V8 moments when you get over there.
Exactly, yeah. So, I think we've contributed to sussing it out here.
I like that. Sussed it out. Figuring it out with Chris Ray, The Septics Companion. Chris, coming up to this interview, I could say I was having kittens, wondering how it was going to be.
Yeah,
having
true.
Kittens. Isn't that fun? What does that mean?
Yeah, it just means you're very nervous about something. I don't know whether having kittens makes cats very nervous, but certainly that's what it means. We also say
kittens, if you're like uncertain about something,
you would say like a cracking laugh or a good crack is another one.
Good crack. But this has been great fun. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Cheers.
Ta.